Content warning. This podcast contains depictions of and discussions on gender-based violence. Audience discretion is advised.
Healthcare. It's a topic that affects every one of us. Everyone has an experience. Think back to a time you needed urgent access to healthcare. The rush to get to a doctor, the impatient wait, the vending machine snacks, and the dread of uncertainty. By the time you get home, you're so exhausted and strung out, it's an experience you dread having again. But imagine that you just lived that experience with the fear of an abusive partner waiting at home, or sat next to you the whole time. Imagine the crushing fear of being judged, or blamed, or saying the wrong thing.
I deal with a lot of women who have mental health issues and addiction issues because my responsibility is looking after women and families who have complex issues, that they're complex challenges. And so I work with women who are suicidal at times, whose addictions are pretty major, and asking them to go to the hospital is really hard for me and for them because they may be diagnosed, stigmatized. There's certain labels they carry as far as mental health that results in them being really dismissed. When they come back and say about how they were treated, I can understand why they don't want to go back.
Welcome to Somebody Must Say These Things. I'm your host, Ginger McPhee. This episode will explore the intersection between healthcare and intimate partner violence. So first off, are healthcare workers trained and resourced to deal with domestic violence? This is Jody McDavid. She's the executive director of the Cape Breton Transition House Association and their shelter, Willow House.
I have seen some changes. I'm aware that there's a push now through the health system to have more people aware of domestic violence and being able to be almost do like a domestic violence first aid, sort of like if they're the first person that this person comes to, and especially you talk about rural environments, like people may be talking to their doctor or the hospital or something about their situation.
This is Anne de St. Croix, coordinator for the Transition House Association of Nova Scotia.
My mind goes to the recently released Desmond Fatality Inquiry, which I think really highlighted the impact of the lack of education and training around gender-based violence in the healthcare system.
A military veteran is one of four family members found dead in an apparent murder-suicide in Upper Big Tracadie, Nova Scotia, Tuesday evening. RCMP were called to the home shortly after 6 Tuesday evening. A family member told Global News Lionel was a member of the Canadian Forces and recently served in Afghanistan. After returning home to Canada, he sought treatment for PTSD in Montreal.
Military and Veterans Affairs knew Lionel Desmond had acute PTSD and was treating him for it, but much of that medical information did not make its way to civilian healthcare providers.
It is striking to me that once Corporal Desmond transferred to Nova Scotia, it took many months to ramp up the care that he so desperately needed.
In that report, it was highlighted that many healthcare professionals didn't recognize the signs of escalating violence, of an abusive relationship, and that there were many interventions that could have happened at particular points in time, but that didn't because these signs went unaddressed and unnoticed. There needs to be, again, more education and training in the healthcare system because the reality is that many nurses and doctors are going to encounter someone who is a victim or survivor of violence. and they may be the first point of contact for that individual, especially if they are isolated and they're coming in for an unrelated issue. But again, some of these red flags are noticed, then there can be intervention and support provided. There's the issue of discrimination by the healthcare system. I think generally, and I think this is reflected in the healthcare system, there's this misconception that abuse is physical violence, and the healthcare system and those working in it may not fully grasp the spectrum of violence and what that includes, which can be emotional, psychological, financial, whatever else it may be. So I think for a woman, it may be intimidating to go to their healthcare professional and explain this if in the past they haven't been taken seriously or if they've been dismissed and their concerns not necessarily followed up on. What this demonstrates again is it's another example of how misinformation, misconceptions, stereotypes, and harmful narratives that exist everywhere, but how those can have really detrimental impacts when they're present in systems that are meant to help people. So, for example, like the healthcare system. So I think, you know, someone saying, why didn't you just leave? It feeds into the victim blaming that we see every day. But when it's coming from someone like a doctor or a nurse, it has really harmful impacts and contributes to that harmful narrative as well. It also dissuades someone from coming forward and from sharing their story and to look for support, because if they themselves have had a negative experience, or if they know someone who has had a negative experience, that doesn't necessarily instill that confidence that if they were to reach out for help, that they would be taken seriously and that they would receive the support they need.
To help you deeper understand the role of healthcare in gender-based violence, we are going to share the story of Nancy in her own words.
I have a history of being in two relationships that were abusive. The last one ended in 2015 when the RCMP removed me for the second time in a couple of weeks because I became suicidal. I thought my only way away from him was to take my own life. I had reached out to resources that didn't seem to be available to me. Department of Community Services had told me I had to be separated from him for 6 weeks before they would help me. When I was removed by the RCMP, because I had called 911 and was suicidal, I ended up in psychiatry. Even while in psychiatry, I had a difficult time having the proper resources and getting back to my own community and surroundings. So I went back to him.
It soon became too dangerous for Nancy to stay with her partner, and she had to be taken out of the situation.
2 weeks later, the RCMP again came to get me because of his abusive ways. And so that time, thankfully, a family member drove to Yarmouth and brought me back to the Valley. I spent 2.5 weeks in psychiatry in the Annapolis Valley and went from there to Chrysalis House. I ended up in psychiatry in Kings County, I guess it would be here at Valley Regional, for just over 2 weeks.
Even though Nancy was now getting help, it was still a situation that triggered her trauma.
My psychiatrist at psych ward was a man. My last marriage, a lot of the abuse was sexual. And it was very difficult because you don't feel comfortable talking to a man on all of those things. So there was a lot of struggles, but it's a lot of let's fix this with a pill and move on to the next. You know, it's like you're packaging chickens or something, right? Let's just keep the assembly line moving and then we become somebody else's problem.
Nancy's social worker believed she knew of a place that could help her recover.
The social worker at psychiatry had spoke to me. She knew my history, of course, because we had all the discussions during that time, and about going to Chrysalis House. And one of the hardest things I found was that I was the one that had to call them. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's like, it was extremely hard. That was the hardest part, was calling the shelter for me. I was terrified. Maybe it's the fear of another letdown. And then it was extremely scary for me to go to Chrysalis House, even though looking back, they were very good about it. They allowed me to come for a visit to see. When I did come to Chrysalis House, I was not ready to be there. I was still in a mental state with a lot of suicidal thoughts.
In this moment, it was crucial that Nancy was treated with understanding and compassion.
I don't believe that they were totally ready to cope with that. I should have been in the hospital a bit longer when I look back, but thanks to the warmth and the allowing me to heal, I guess, from the shelter, because even the social worker from the psychiatry ward was still involved with me, but she was right in my first few days. I had to open bank accounts. I had to start looking for a place to live. And I was so broken. I was not in any shape to be doing this. And she was almost pushing me over the edge until one of the women at Chrysalis House said to me, "You are not ready. Take time to heal." And that is what you're here to do. You need to heal before you take on all of this. And so once I heard those words, it was like the weight of the world lifted off of my shoulders. And it makes me kind of emotional because, you know, that was my saving grace. Those words couldn't have come at a better moment. And that is what I needed. At Chrysalis House, it was where my healing began. And I'm 55. I had, at 13 years in foster care, I had never had opportunity for healing ever until I came to Chrysalis House in 2017. It was the first time I was given permission to heal. It was also the first time that anybody took the time to really, truly listen to my story. Tell you one thing that will probably stick with me for my entire life.
When the health system failed to give her what she needed, Chrysalis House offered her a moment of clarity.
I was under the intense care of trauma therapy. As we know, our healthcare system is flawed. And while I was at Chrysalis House, I had an amazing trauma therapist who was coming, making visits to come see me in-house. The healthcare system had pulled her off of my case. So I was left without a trauma therapist within a month of being at Chrysalis House. So, you know, after 3 stays in a psych ward and now finally having a trauma therapist, that was pulled. And I can remember the day I was sitting in the art room and I was so broken. Like, to me, this was the end. I've done everything I could possibly do. I've come to Chrysalis House and now this trauma therapist has been taken away from me. And I was crying. And, you know, I had begged. I begged her while she was there. And Brenda was with me. And I had begged my trauma therapist to help me. And she wasn't allowed to. So she left. And I was getting up to walk out of the room. And the worker at Chrysalis House stopped me because I was like, I wouldn't have made it, I don't think, past that day. And she asked me to sit back down. So I did. And she said, "I forget if it was 20 or 30 years ago, I was exactly where you are right now." And that changed my life. Just knowing, like, I looked at this person who's so smart and sophisticated and seems to have it so together. And I thought, you were right here 20 or 30 years ago. How is that even possible? Like, you know, so there was my little ray of hope.
I know what's happened in all the other agencies is that there's been cutbacks, there's lack of funding, they're struggling too, but the gaps that are there, if they're not filled, it's going to really create a difference whether these women move from victim to survivor to actually thriving. And it's not enough to be a survivor.
Nancy now sees the power every woman has to overcome all of these obstacles. This is what Brenda had to say.
All these women who come in are amazingly strong. They don't see that, but I do. But they need to learn to thrive, because that's when they take their personal power back, they move on with their lives, and they get connected in a community and start living the life they were meant to live.
So does the healthcare system help victims of gender-based violence, or are we seeing it fueling a cycle of continued trauma?
Of course, I'm certainly not the only woman who has escaped their abuser and ended up in a psych ward, because that is part of the cycle. They convince you you're crazy, and they actually can drive you to the point where I think you do become kind of crazy, to be honest. You know, I was having homicidal thoughts. Suicidal thoughts. That wasn't me. I don't think I have met a woman, and I've met quite a few with my stay in psych ward or at Chrysalis House, and even since Chrysalis House, in my own volunteering in the community to help women of domestic abuse, I don't think I've met a woman that hasn't been given psychiatric drugs. And I remember standing in a lineup with the other girls saying, you know, that whatever, you know, I won't say a bad word, but abused us. And here we are the one taking the crazy train drugs, right? I didn't feel in psych ward that there was any compassion for what I had been through.
Our province's transition houses are filling gaps that the medical system increasingly fails to fill, often with limited resources, but fueled by our mission. Again, Brenda from Chrysalis House.
We got a partnership with one of the counseling agencies here. We've got a counselor, a therapist that comes in every week and meets with the women who are open to that. And she's just amazing. And we see the difference in the women when that starts and that person is there for them. It's almost like a physical difference, like they stand taller and their heads are higher and they have hope. And the big thing is that they don't have hope. For addictions, we still struggle with that. We also have, with the counseling agency, we have a counselor who will come in and meet with the children. And we now have a sensory room set up for the children. So we're working to fill the gaps that are there without really being funded for that.
So I kind of became known to the younger girls that were in the shelter. I was here for 3 months at Chrysalis House. And, you know, I became known as like the house mother, I guess. And surprisingly, we had a great group of girls. We were very healing for each other. And before I left, they all had like one girl had made me brownies. They all signed a card. We all dressed up and had a party, and we wore funky looking clothes and walked around town. And to my knowledge, that hadn't happened before. So it was a going away party. And to this day, I'm still in touch with every one of those girls. And they had an art room, and I started to color. And the same worker that had said those words, healing words to me, had taught me how to use Mod Podge and how to do pictures on canvas and things like that. And so, well, now I lead a peer group, and it is art therapy. And it started at Chrysalis House. That's where I began.
The health crisis continues. THANS and the partner houses will continue to do all we can. But when will enough be enough?
Addictions, like all of these, mental health is very hard to get a counselor these days. There's long waiting lists. when they do get connected, it's brief. I think it's 5 sessions now. And most of the women that we deal with, they're not simple things. They're dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome. They've got mental health issues that are pretty extensive. Some of them are using different addictions to try and cope. And so it's a really complex kind of picture that comes into play. And I find that they want to separate it. So it's like, okay, so you've got physical issues. We'll see if you can get to a doctor, except many of the women don't have doctors, which is one of the reasons I think our executive director was so visionary, and that she created a partnership with a primary care team here. And so women who don't have doctors can see a doctor here once a month. And that really gets on top of some of the medical issues they're dealing with.
It all began with the art therapy. So there's your chain reaction. I ended up at Chrysalis House, which is where my healing was allowed to happen and allowed to begin. And it's continued through Chrysalis House since then, I would have to honestly say, because I still reach out to them for myself. And so I have been able to send that energy on to completely turn somebody else's life around.
We already have a plan to fix many of these issues. In the final report of the Mass Casualty Commission, the mainstreaming and increased availability of mental health services was a key recommendation. It states that federal, provincial, and territorial governments should develop a national action plan to promote better integration of preventative and supportive mental health care into the Canadian healthcare system, so as to ensure greater access to these services on an equal level as physical health care. It is also called to enhance grief, bereavement, trauma, and resiliency literacy, and for trauma-informed training to be integrated across public sector service delivery. We may have a very detailed plan, but will anyone use it? As of February 2nd, Mary's abuser's resentencing was postponed again, this time until June. This latest delay has meant that the courts have drawn out Mary's journey to justice for over 2 years. If you've heard some of your own story in this episode and feel a need to reach out for some support, please find your local shelter at thans.ca. Also, if this podcast and its message resonates with you and you want to help us in our mission, reach out to your local transition house to hear what their needs are. Each shelter has their own website that you can get directed to from thans.ca.